Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, today's episode is brought to you by the incredible Rad Roller Mobility Tools, my absolute favorite tools for self-myofascial relief for at-home treatment for all aches, pains, and mobility issues. They're an incredible asset to your movement program and care that you're already receiving. Check out the link in our show notes below to get $5 off your purchase of $25 or more. Enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and we have Erica Marcus joining us today. She is the author of Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. She serves as a mindfulness director for a small school district outside of Portland, Maine. And I have been looking forward to this conversation because this is mostly going to be about the use of technology and our well-being and mindfulness. And we've talked a lot on the podcast before, and there's certainly a lot of information out in the world about how technology is our mental and emotional ruin. And the conversation always strikes me as really ironic as we are having it here on a podcast delivered to you entirely at the hands of technology. I mean, Erica is all the way out there in Portland, Maine, beautiful, beautiful city, but I'm here in Denver, Colorado, and we never would have met each other. So Erica wrote this fantastic book, actually geared toward teenagers, about how we can make peace and boundaries and be mindful around technology so that it is not this end-all be-all evil, but like so many things that we talk about here, find that middle path of helpful versus hurting. So Erica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit how you came to start having this conversation, with your students that perhaps led to Attention Hijacked?
Sure. So I think a lot of different entry points, but I was working at a STEM school in Portland, Maine with high school students and teaching mindfulness and health. And a lot of the conversations just naturally gravitated towards technology as a piece of that. So noticing the space that they took up in our lives and noticing the ways that they distracted us. And honestly, I think when I started, I was a little bit more heavy-handed about like technology is bad. And that does not sit for the young people that I was working with, because that's not their experience of it and it's not their perspective. So as soon as I shifted to more of like a curiosity-based inquiry, it felt like it allowed for a conversation to happen both around what is hard and difficult about having technology, but also about what is wonderful and connecting about having technology.
Right, because it can be both. And really, it has to be. I mean, I think you and I are closer of the same generation of having that localized landline at home. You know, we didn't have internet, social media, texting as our way of getting to know people. So the entire platform and formatting of how we reached out to our friends when we were growing up is wildly different than teenagers today. I was talking with a neighbor down the street who's 18, and just, you know, this shocking idea that I would walk down the street and leave a note on my neighbor's door because they didn't have an answering machine attached to their landline. And that was how I'd let them know I wanted to have, you know, a lemonade stand with them later on the day it's such a different world for only, 20, 30 years difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And I think it's hard as adults for us to just appreciate the depth at which it has infiltrated the lives of young people, but not always in such a terrible way.
Mm-hmm. And the other piece, and we'll kind of dig into this a little bit more, but the other piece that I really like about what you're writing is that while this book is geared towards teenagers and helping them develop healthy habits, you also put a lot of points within your book about like, hey, here's a nice way to tell your parents that maybe they should kind of read the book too. And I'm wondering, in that vein of how much things have changed, before we dive into like what is to be done about the now, but in that vein of how much things have changed, I think there is a really important awareness piece is that, you know, teenagers and early 20 somethings have known no different. But once we hit that elder millennial age and older, we were slowly infiltrated and like never developed good habits. There was no discussion about good habits. It was just this thing that suddenly we had in our back pocket. How, and there's that often you hear the comment that actually the parents are kind of worse, or at least the perception from teenagers, which the parents are always worse, but that's not the point. Can we talk a little bit about, you know, the difference in where technology showed up in your life and kind of what you see in that habit building or that appreciation of it?
Sure. Yeah. For myself, you mean, as I was sort of growing with it?
Yeah. Or even as you're writing the book, what you've noticed in talking with your students.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think to the point about parents are worse, like I hear all the time kids sort of calling their parents out for different behaviors and habits and choices. And I do think it's harder as something that like crept into our lives for us to have really thought about in an intentional way, how do I want to use this? And thus, how do I want my family to use this? What do I value in this world? And how do I make sure our tech use aligns with those values? So, I mean, I think part of the book I sort of confess and what is true is like, this is an ongoing exploration for me. And I don't think I always sit like right where I want to be. It's sort of a pendulum swing. Mm-hmm. And it requires constant attention and vigilance for me to keep my technology use in a place where I feel like this is healthy, this aligns with my values, and it gives me nourishment.
That's so true. And I like the acknowledgement that this is a swing. This is a homeostasis of finding that middle ground with over and undershooting, you know, wondering, you know, some of the mindfulness that you talk about in the book. It's like, am I feeling tireder and crabbier? And is that perhaps from I got back in the habit of scrolling? In much the same way that we think about in other conversations about like, gosh, I feel really dried out. Oh, I'm dehydrated. Oh, I've been drinking too much. Like you can overdo it. That's okay. But let's have the wherewithal to witness ourselves and get a little bit of an association of feel like this behavior should be this in the conversation of technology. And mm-hmm. I just don't hear enough conversations like that. So I really appreciate the work that you're bringing and you joining us here today.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, I would just add one more layer, like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we add like guilt and shame, on there. And I think when we can be a little bit lighter with ourselves and our kids, as we're all sort of negotiating this time and take the blame out a little bit and recognize that like, this is a very, potent draw and us as individuals, there are a lot of people really working to keep us on there and they're designed in that way. So, it's not about like our failings as an individual. It's very hard to stay in a place of health and value aligned use.
100%. I'm so glad that you brought that up. And it's such a good place to remember with any endeavor that we take, that if we start with shame and judgment, it is so much harder to change behavior and meet yourself where you want to be than the acknowledgement of, yeah, that's not working. Let's try something else. And you bring up a really excellent segue, by the way, because where we wanted to go next was talking about, you know, technology is really strategically designed. And I think it's a little bit of a pop culture. Oh, did you know it's like having a, you know, what do they say, a slot machine in your back pocket? But this is strategic. It is designed to take advantage of how our brain has worked. Tell us a little bit more. Help us unravel that.
Yeah. So, you know, there are lots of design features and honestly, probably like well beyond my understanding even, but at the simplest level, there are lots of design features that keep us in whatever the experience is. So for example, you brought up this like variable reward or the slot machine effect that happens when we suddenly get likes that pop up in the middle of our scrolling. So that will give us this little hit of dopamine. We feel good. We keep going. Similarly, we could point to like an auto scroll feature, right? So it's harder to stop if it just keeps going, or like an endless scroll if we're talking about like TikTok or Instagram. So there are lots of little strategies like that, that just keep us wanting more and coming back for more. And notifications are lit up, you know, they use the color red on purpose. And, so that's another way that we get a little hit whenever a notification goes off.
Yeah, because we hear a lot about this dopamine release of getting a like or getting an attention feedback. But just as quickly as it shows up, it tends to go away. But we start that feedback loop of looking for that return on investment, so to speak. We want to see our time spent rewarded, and those little pop-ups, those likes and messages, direct messages are all part of that.
Yeah. And I mean, lots of things, you know, trigger our dopamine loop, like anything that's pleasurable, really. That's what the pleasure feeling comes from. But I think it's just like the intensity of it as you're scrolling that can be difficult for us to handle. And that creates that craving for more.
Well, and so in that same regard, you know, anything that's pleasurable, if we have those videos that scroll past us, that auto loop scroll, and it's this immediate attention diversion, I believe I read at one point that even the speed at which the videos scroll is intentional, because it catches in that microsection of attention before you can consciously shift to something else. You've got another cute puppy in front of you, or whatever it is that you're scrolling.
Yeah, that's why I love using a timer so much, as just like a gross tool in our use. Is like, all right, I want to keep track of how much time I'm willing to dedicate to this, not like be as caught up in the way that they've framed it to keep me on there for longer.
And so some of these tools, so I guess what I'm hearing you say and what I read here in your book is that a lot of what we need to do is create that mindful point of accessing tools outside of the devices itself, the technology devices itself. Okay, they're set up to keep your attention. We know that. No shame, no judgment. We have the tool. It gives us a lot of really great things, which I do want to circle back to what some of the positive things about technology are. So what do we do now, knowing that? What are our options to not just get sucked down the scrolling rabbit hole?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at the most basic layer, our strongest power is our control over our own attention. And we can start by setting intentions. Like, how do we set ourselves up for discrete experiences of screen, and then like choose an endpoint for that experience, as opposed to the way we often use it, which is just like interwoven throughout our day. And then decide ahead of time, you know, with this intentional move, like, what do I want to do while I'm on here? What do I not want to be distracted by? And like, how do I feel getting ready? And then we can use a timer if it's a longer project, like for those of us who are on email a lot, or, you know, for kids, if they're at home, like typing a paper, then they can choose an amount of time to time for. And then in the middle of that time, check in and notice again, like, well, what's happening right now, like with my body? What's happening right now with my mind? Do I need a break? Am I noticing I'm getting lethargic? Am I noticing that I'm getting agitated? So if it's an entertainment purpose that you're on for, it might be a good cue that like, oh, I like thought this was going to be fun, but now I'm on here and I'm feeling sort of crappy about myself. So maybe I need to shift. Or maybe I'm still really into whatever the thing is. So I like can set another timer and check back in at the end. So there's like intention, and then having it be a little bit more time bound, and then like an ending point. And through that all, can I stay a little bit more connected, which is, again, it's very difficult to what's actually happening in my physical body.
Yeah. I love that. And especially when you bring it to the intention of why you're there. I think that that's something I guess I can really only speak to myself in this. As we acknowledge, there's such an array of experience with technology. I was having a really great conversation with my nearly 91-year-old great aunt, who's like, yeah, I never really understood the internet. What's the point of it again? Versus, you know, down to this like, you know, monolith screen for my 5-year-old that I won't let her dive into yet. But for me, you know, it's all of the sudden we had this tool that suddenly could do one thing after another, after another. And it remains like the phone, to call it a phone anymore. It remains the phone, the tablet, the screen, but not to have this really succinct awareness of I am going on for email, for a writing project, or just as legitimately for fun, for communicating with my friends, and letting each of those be as purposeful as if you were picking up a different device for everything. Because we used to. We used to pick up our Walkman. We used to pick up the landline. Mm-hmm. We used to pick up a piece of paper and a stamp. And we've somehow created this big muddy mesh without purpose or intention. Is that kind of what you're getting to?
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great way to describe it. Just creating a little bit more space around everything in our minds, because I think part of the effect of the way that we can fall into using tech right now is like any spare moment we have, we're on there for no particular purpose other than the fact that like we have a sense that that time should be filled. Mm-hmm.
And so bringing purpose and a container to that really feels freeing to me. Because yeah. Now, you know, in the talk about that using shame or judgment, if I'm just picking up my phone because, but if I think about it in terms of I want to play a game and it's okay to play a game. I mean, that's why Game Boys existed. That's why I've got Candyland on the shelf behind me. Games yes. are fun.
Yeah.
But be intentional about sitting down with that game, unlike the I guess I should just zone out and fill my time kind of choice.
All the time. Yeah. Yeah. I think for myself, I have for example, a guilty pleasure of like staying up too late and watching reality television before we start like a break, like when we go into summer break or we go into April vacation or whatever it is. And I love it. And I, you know, it's not good for me, but mm-hmm. I will like sit there and binge watch whatever it is and enjoy that time and appreciate it. And then, you know, move on from that. So that was mm-hmm. like, whatever, it's like eating your whole bag of chips or whatever you did that like didn't actually ultimately feel that good, but you're just like having a moment and being a little bit more hedonistic. but you know, then recalibrating mm-hmm. from there. So that like, maybe you don't want to do that every night because then you're going to really start to notice the cumulative effects.
I love this. It's really just bringing the power of choice into a tool like anything else that we've done. And so you talk a lot about examining our habits and being curious if they work for us or not. And you've alluded to this a couple of times. And I think this is a really great place to spend a good chunk here is witnessing how you feel. I mean, that was one of the things that ultimately made me, I found some bot hack online. Like I know what it actually is, but it turned off my Facebook feed because scrolling made me feel like crap constantly. Now I have a business, so I have my business page. I'm in various groups, beekeepers and backyard gardeners and other hippy dippy stuff. And I want to check in on those groups, but the constant scroll always made me feel terrible. So you talk a little bit about what are you noticing within yourself and then really bringing conscious attention to it instead of just letting yourself feel like crap for the rest of the day or the week or what have you? How do we start to pull that apart for ourselves?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's helpful to sort of name that even just baseline, like getting familiar with your own body's experience for some people is like pretty radical. Like some of us are really disconnected from our bodies. So I think that's where more formal mindfulness practice or yoga or something can be helpful just in terms of, like feeling into the physical self. And like, if I'm just sitting here, can I notice like what's happening in my belly or my chest or my jaw? Are these places that are typically, points of tension that like give us good information about what the experience that we're having, what the impact is. Mm-hmm. And the more we can sort of fine tune that awareness, I think the more we start to notice it in other spaces, like a space where we're using technology that already makes it so easy to be disembodied, having some degree of awareness to bring into that is really helpful as a base layer. And then, yeah, I mean, I think it's about intentionally checking into those feeling points and just mm-hmm. like noticing what are the sensations right now. Is my forehead all like crunched up, you know, are my shoulders up by my ears, as a good feedback point.
I love it. I like this, using these traditional methods, the feeling into, and the way you put it is, a really welcoming invitation to not have these traditional areas of mindfulness and calm be at odds with technology, but again, opening that door so that if you know more about how you're feeling, if you have that embodiment, you know, when you can feel a headache coming on instead of waiting until it's a migraine, you know, these sort of variations by degrees, then that's information you can use to use anything in your life more appropriately, including technology, not excluding this evil thing that we never should have let inside the house in the first place.
Yes. And I do, you know, I do think there is a space for like completely abstaining as a tool to notice the impact of that. Or like at our school recently, we participated in Screen Free Week, which is something an organization called Fair Play put on. And we didn't ask the kids to not use their screens. We asked them to set an attainable goal for themselves and then reflect afterwards on like what that experience is like. And some of them were noticing like, oh, I had fewer headaches. And I don't know that they necessarily would have noticed that they were having headaches because of screens while they were using them, but like having a little bit of a reprieve gave them that space to observe like headaches, eye strain. A few of them noticed that they were sleeping more. So sometimes we do have to step away to be able mm-hmm. to see what's happening. Because if it's in our water, so to speak, then it's harder to see.
Yeah, but again, these feel like such simple ahas to me. And I think I'm just really showing my cards as being, you know, I joke on the podcast a lot of being like actually 107 years old. I try not to use technology as much as I can because I'm more like my 91-year-old grantee than my 5-year-old. But it's just like, of course, it's like everything else. You know, sometimes you don't know what food is bothering you, so you need to do an elimination diet. Sometimes you don't know what exercise is causing you knee pain, so you need to stop and figure that out. Like, duh, technology, just stop and figure it out. I'm a little embarrassed for myself, but I do hope that there are listeners here who are like being just as wonderfully lit up as I am over some of the simplest fixes around something that we hear so much debate about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope so too. That's sort of what led me to write the book was just to offer some of these ways of approaching it. Cause we don't really have another choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you can choose to be totally off, but that feels inaccessible to a lot of people, especially young people. Or I guess you can choose to just like use it without any thought mindlessly, but that doesn't seem, particularly healthy for most of us. So it seems like what else is there besides to pay attention? And in a, you know, in this way, that's maybe a little bit, like less, blame filled and attacking and just like what you just said, more like curious, like, can we really be sort of curious about how this is playing out for us.
Yeah. And to take that on, because you talk a lot about exploring this as a community and the idea of taking that on as a family and being curious about what does it mean if we all don't have our phones at the table? What does it mean if we all listen to music together, playing off of our device, but our device is not really in that accessible place. So we're really just using it for music. That now it's not about, oh, well, you're always in your screen. You have fallen into the TV. You have disappeared. This is a community experience with a new something that we've got to learn how to navigate together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, couching that in like, we really care about being together as a family. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to take time where that is uninterrupted. So just knowing like, why are we, you know, standing in these boundaries and holding these spaces for ourselves as like communal experiences, if you are using the screen together or deciding to put them all away or whatever it is, I think understanding like, okay, well, what's really important to me for my family? And then how can we set our tech boundaries around those things that are important?
I like that place of coming from values. In fact, that was before we started, I was flipping through your book again, and that was the page that I happened to land on was you offer so many great journal prompts and kind of self-awareness places so that, you know, you invite your readers to take a look at how they're using technology or what's important to them. And on this particular page was, what are your values? And it got me thinking, it was like, you know, especially we want to set good boundaries for this little creature that we're raising, and knowing that our values are around community and family and being together in that. So we do have technology in the house. I mean, obviously we must. And we have music, and we listen to music together, and we have family movie night, and we will use the phone to look through our family vacation photos together, which is something that our daughter is just recently very obsessed with. And it fits that value. So it had me thinking like, it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, so much screen time, her eyes are being poisoned. It felt like, no, we are using this screen to do something that matches our value as a family. And it takes the shame out of the usage. Yep. Versus if I slide off into that little tech game that I like to play when I'm with my family, I do feel gross because I'm not in value with what my choices are.
Yeah. Right. You're not in alignment with what you mm-hmm. care about. And so there's a little part of you, right? That's the information that's like, well, that actually doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we can sort of notice, like, it's not that I'm bad or wrong. It's like, I'm not living in a way that is me showing up for the things that I care about.
Yeah, and then it takes the pressure off of the thing.
Yes.
Because it's not the game that is evil or good or whatever. It is simply colorful blocks that I get to pop and get prizes that mean nothing because they're technology. I mean, that it is not useful when I'm with my family, but when I am exhausted at the end of the day by myself, it's a nice way to blow off a little bit of steam, but it takes the pressure off of that one thing and brings that awareness into what are my values, and I have the responsibility for enacting those. And that feels much less powerless than this hijack slot machine in my back pocket.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's important to, I do think it's important to have a little bit of both, like mm-hmm. taking ownership of what we can. And also, you know, I think that didn't come out as much in the book because it wasn't really my focus, but does feel important, is like, I do think we can keep leaning on policy and leaning on representatives to sort of help with that end. Like, if things are being designed in this addictive way, like, there's a Center for Humane Technology that was founded by Tristan Harris, and they are trying to do work helping these companies like scale that back a bit, especially mm-hmm. for children. And so, just keeping in mind, like, we can't always take everything on as like individuals, because mm-hmm. I think in some ways that feeds that idea that we don't have the willpower or whatever it mm-hmm. is, right? Like, actually it is designed in this way. And another way we can sort of take control is to be participating in movements that are trying to ask more of corporations that are benefiting from capturing our attention. So there is another layer there. Yeah,
absolutely. And I thank you for drawing the attention to the larger layer, because that is a part of it. And Hugely so. That's, and you know, I want to focus a lot on that empowering piece in this conversation, because we have so much in other podcasts said, well, this is just awful. They are, you know, the big machine, big tech.
Yes.
Yeah. Big food, big pharma, big tech. We got all the big bullies out there. Right. That responsibility still needs to be there. In the same way that advertising cigarettes to small children was not appropriate, you know, getting kids hooked on, you know, quick response games and scrolling much too young, like they don't have the tools at that moment to practice reflection. That's and right. self-awareness. So yes, there is a much bigger picture here. And I really support and agree with, you know, we need to have tech provided responsibly as much as we need to use it responsibly. But that's a two-sided coin.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a both and was a phrase that I was gifted once. And I think about that a lot.
Yeah. As technology is here and we need to learn to exist with it in our world while still trying to make it a healthy portion of it. You do a lot to empower your readers outside of the, well, until big tech decides to play nice, right, y'all are just going to have to deal. You know, there's a lot of those pieces where there is a lot more that we can do to work with tech and work with the tools that are in front of us.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's right. And, you know, obviously I wouldn't have written the book if I thought we were completely powerless. So I think, one piece is, as you pointed to, just working within our smaller communities. I think that can be really supportive, whether that's our family unit or even just like if you're in a school district, like thinking together, how are we going to use this tool?
And do you have any advice for the individual within their community, whether it is a teenager within their household or a parent within their household, a concerned member of a school or group? How do you start bringing the subject up in a way that is accessible and attainable? Because I think as we started talking about, there is so much shame wrapped up in the conversation. And I think If my little light bulbs going off were any indication, a lot of doom and gloom of powerlessness around, well, it's a slot machine, what are we going to do? How do you start pushing that boulder uphill?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I can speak to like my approach, which has been really just to like open the conversation. Hopefully with some agreements that support, support the idea of like entering conversation with curiosity and entering conversation with understanding, as opposed to, you know, our natural defensiveness. Like, so having the conversation about technology in a way that's maybe more mindful and intentional, because I think, interestingly, in the ways that technology have brought us all to like this fevered pitch where we're all screaming at one another, I think maybe an antidote is, can we come together and have a conversation over Zoom or in person or wherever it is that is really less about like winning and proving points and more about trying to hear perspectives. And I think that's true in a family unit, like as an individual coming to a family or as a community member concerned wanting to come and talk with, you know, the community around the school or whatever. Whatever it is, I think that shift is really important, just like for our democracy in general, but also can be useful in this very specific topic.
Oh, what a whole nother pile of mindfulness to dig into. To think about how we have learned to speak and engage with each other online, knowing that it does have that tendency of making that point and proving it as succinctly as possible within an argument, not to have a conversation, but to expect to be misunderstood and to have the privilege of unfollowing and walking away from anyone who disagrees with you, that certainly doesn't set a strong groundwork for, hey, I know we have different opinions about this really, you know, pervasive thing. Let's talk about it. Right. What a great invitation to notice how our words are going to be different in this situation as well.
Yeah, I've been as an adult, like who works with young people, I'm just really disappointed in what we're modeling in terms of like how we deal with very complex and complicated issues. And I think like, how can we expect them to come to the table and be ready to be open and understanding and curious and, you know, true to what they believe and able to share it with civility if we as adults are not modeling that behavior. And unfortunately, the design of, you know, news stations and at this point, like TikTok and all these other places where kids are getting news from does not really have enough space for that kind of dialogue. So yeah, I think that's tricky.
I have heard the advice on more than one occasion in the last few years of depending on what hot button issue, what side you were on of it. And this is going back to like 2016. So since then, there have been a couple of divisive things that have happened throughout the United States, just a few. it makes no sense to talk to people on that side of the line. Just don't have a conversation with them. It will go nowhere. And I feel like that advice has been really underserving. Perhaps it comes from the heart of, you know, protecting yourself. And if there is a lot of hate speech or attacks coming your way from someone holding a different opinion, yes, we need to protect ourselves from that, protect our loved ones from that. But just taking this whole category of worldview and saying, I have no place talking to these people. There is no place for these people in my world. We really don't learn how to negotiate differences, as we were talking about around technology. And then the great irony is the more technology we have, the more we're connected to people who are different than us, that we would never have met outside of our tiny little community if it weren't for this technology that was teaching us to yell at each other.
Right. Yeah. It could be a space where we came and did have this opportunity to learn from folks who might not be in our immediate bubble, but I don't think many people are using it that way. And, you know, maybe the humanity that's needed to have difficult conversations is not well served through this medium. So I think that is interesting to explore too.
And to think about these things in the form of tools for what they are. You know, I certainly don't find that if I need to have a difficult conversation with someone, I'm not texting them.
Yes.
You know, right. We're going back to the old fashioned tool of sitting across from, you know, a hot cup of tea or coffee or something and talking it out that way. There's a place for everything. And sometimes it's the wrong tool. It's a, you know, not the hammer for the nail. It's a screwdriver, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that particular situation is interesting because I do have some students when I talk to them about difficult conversations who say like, well, I really appreciate having like the time to like be thoughtful in my response and like not have to respond immediately. So I can respect that as one way of thinking about it. But I also, you know, my perspective is that you lose so much when it's in text and you can't have body language and you can't see the face. And I know whenever, if I feel like a text exchange is suddenly like talking about something real, I try to bring it to a phone call or an in-person conversation. I try not to do it that way because I feel like I'm always misunderstanding and being misunderstood in that space. So
yeah, absolutely. And to have that time to think and have a mindful response makes a lot of sense. And also it's something that can be practiced and learned in real time. Yes. How else did humans survive this long?
That's right. Yeah.
So again, I mean, we see so many generational differences, so many differences in uses of tools for different purposes. But again, what keeps coming back around is being mindful and knowing, are you getting the value met out of the choice you've just made? Mm-hmm. You know, are you building a relationship stronger, or are you misunderstanding each other in the form of text that doesn't have body language? Maybe you are more fluent in emojis than we are.
Could very well be.
Which I would believe. I would believe the party. But if you're having that value and that need met, then that is a tool well used. Mm-hmm. And if you are feeling more misunderstood, crummy, headachy, and drawn out, then a tool inappropriately placed. And we can start to be really curious about how to change that behavior.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
Beautiful. Well, Erica, you were kind enough to send ahead a copy of your book, Attention Hijacked, where I got to like have my sneak peek for this conversation. but we're also doing another one of our Instagram giveaways. So we're going to give away this wonderful copy that I want to keep for myself, but I have a five-year-old and I'm sure a lot of you have teenagers. This wonderful copy of Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. Find us Healing Ground Movement podcast on Instagram, because we're going to use technology, and follow the contest rules. We'll draw a winner, and I will send this book to you myself. And I hope that it helps you as much as it has enlightened me. Erica, if people are just as lit up as I am, where can they learn more about you and your work, and where can they get at their own copy of this book?
Sure. Yeah. So I have a website called Wise Minds, Big Hearts. I think if you search that up, you'd probably be able to find it rather than having to get all of the signals right. When I started the business, I wasn't all that savvy in terms of getting that all as a best practice. But yeah, going to the website, and you can get the book anywhere. You could go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you. You could go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon. So sort of wherever you like to get your materials. Yeah.
Wonderful. And we will have the Wise Minds Big Hearts in the show links below. Definitely head on over to Instagram. Let us know if you are interested in this book. And then I am just so curious to hear from our listeners what it is about technology that works for you. Also, what are you noticing that doesn't work for you, and maybe how you have changed that? And we can really start to make this a curious conversation about what are the opportunities, not the all or nothing. And so kind of in closing, Erica, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm wondering, you know, in the book you talked about some of the things that your students tell you that they really get and benefit from with technology. What were some of the surprising ones that maybe us old fogey millennials and Gen Xers and boomers could benefit to hear?
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be hard to hear this without skepticism as someone who like haven't had this experience, but young people tell me they form genuine connections with people that they've never met in person. And, you know, they find, especially thinking about students who like maybe don't feel like they found a local community that supports them, maybe their interests diverge significantly or their identity diverges significantly from those around them, they can find comfort in community online. And I think that, you know, in terms of human needs is incredibly important. And if they're naming, they find connection there. I think that is important aspect of tech use. So
I love that. And really what an opportunity for so many who do feel so isolated, and what a great flip of the coin, because we talk about how technology isolates us and makes us feel alone. But for someone who grows up in a community where they just don't feel that they fit, this is the first place that perhaps they will find others like them. And that can be the biggest life raft and the biggest helping. I will say that I definitely came of the generation where, you know, meeting people online and actually being friends with them made you a big old weirdo. And it was only in the last 3 years, in, you know, really from the time of the pandemic shutdown, as I started to cast my podcast net wider, I started meeting people coast to coast who are just some of the most incredible people I have ever met. Some of my guests here have become some really dear friends to me, and I've never met them in person. And that still is absolutely wild to me. I've got my own little judgment from how I grew up and what I was told in the 90s, but I am just so grateful to have them in my life. And it's a real eye-opening experience to see things come to fruition that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It is helpful to have had those connections. For me, I have worked on teams that I've never met in person and feel very close to them. So it's a good reminder to have had those experiences and then be able to relate like, oh, I guess that makes sense. Like even if they didn't meet them in a work context, like that you can still build relationship online. So, you know, with the caveat of being very careful and privacy concerns and all that, of course, I do think there's space to respect that that form of connection.
I love it. And yes, very much that caveat. And again, I think that just brings out that there is no like true black and white conversation happening here. Like the message that we try to bring out on the Healing Ground Movement so often is it is that very unsexy middle ground. Life is advertised to us in extremes. Our devices are made for the extremes, and the all or nothing behavior, no one is really going to ever be entirely right. So the answer lies somewhere in that middle path. So Erica, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experience along that journey.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. Again, I am the 107-year-old at heart who just got her mind blown with some simple awarenesses of how to use tools. But I think there were a lot of great nuggets in this conversation to maybe change the way you discuss using technology in your home. Maybe just a conversation with yourself to start. But there is definitely a lot of opportunity to start looking at these things as individual tools and not as one big pit to fall into. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on Instagram. Don't forget to sign up to win the giveaway of Attention Hijacked. And we'll see you next time for another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. Be well. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it to help you on your journey to health. Please, if you're inclined, share this podcast with a friend so we can help more people lead healthier lives. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help. And we'll see you next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement Podcast. Be well.